What's up, Pels fans? Welcome to the Pelican Debrief Podcast. My name is Preston Ellis, and you can follow me at Preston Ellis. Now, we've got a very special guest coming up, Mason Ginsberg of Bourbon Street Shots. I'm very excited to get his take on the Pelicans offseason. But before we do that, I just want to let you guys know a little bit about what we're doing on PelicanDebrief.com this week. We're talking some season reviews of the entire roster. We've already got Anthony Davis, Cheick Diallo. I contributed Etuan Moore today, so stay tuned for that. Keep looking at the site. Follow us at Pelican Debrief. But now, I'm not going to waste any more time. Let's talk to Mason Ginsberg. You guys, it's time to phone a friend. And now we welcome onto the program Mason Ginsberg. How are you doing, Mason?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much for taking the time to spend with us. Now, of course, you guys can follow him at Mason Ginsberg, at Bourbon Street Shots. You can see some of his new material, and at True Hoop Network. In case you guys don't know Mason, you probably do. If you're following us, you're probably a diehard fan, and you spend a lot of time on the Bourbon Street Shots website. But a little background, I got this from the Bourbon Street Shots website. Mason began sports writing towards the end of 2010 over at HoopDat, moved to At The Hive, went to Tulane. Tell us a little bit about your background as a Pelicans fan, Mason.
Yeah, I actually forgot. We did those bios so long ago. I was like, oh, God, what is he going to say? What's on? I did not even remember what was on there. But started writing for fun after undergrad, dealing with a college buddy. But I've been a New Orleans Hornets / Pelicans fan since they arrived in 2002. My family got season tickets when they arrived. We were never Saints season ticket holders. We're a baseball and basketball family. And so I've been pretty big on the team ever since they've been around. And I tell you what, my dad's from New York, so I was raised until that point. I was a Knicks fan, and the timing could not have been better. I mean, we have our share of complaints, but I think I made the switch from Knicks to Hornets at the right time.
And now that you're living in Chicago, have you ever thought about possibly cutting bait and following the Jimmy Butler train?
God, I mean, the Bulls are fun. That's equally. You should hear some of the fans up here about that ownership or that leadership group. Not a lot of optimism here too. But I mean, it's fun to kind of get a little more in depth on another team that's not New Orleans and see how the Pelicans compare. And it's obviously not the model franchise in Chicago, but there's some similarities and some differences for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we won't take up any more of your time talking about the Bulls. We are here to get your expertise on the New Orleans Pelicans. And Mason, this is probably the most important offseason in their brief 12-year history, this and the Chris Paul journey. The number one story in the offseason appears to be the future of point guard True Holiday, but this concern is sort of masked by a much darker lurking concern. And that concern is almost 90-year-old owner Tom Benson and president of basketball operations. I get the Saints and the Pelicans mixed up from time to time. Once again, we are stuck in wait-and-see mode weeks after the NBA season, playing second fiddle to big brother Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. Demps has said, "The season just ended yesterday." This was 2 weeks ago, by the way. "I walk in here every day excited about my job. Right now, we're in evaluation mode." Alvin Gentry said, "We haven't had the talk with ownership, but that'll happen soon, I'm sure." Mason, it's been 2 weeks, and we seemingly don't have an answer as to the future of our franchise during the most important offseason, and the NBA draft and free agency are just weeks away. How concerned are you with the seeming lack of urgency from the executives?
You spin it and make me want to panic, but I just that's a compliment to you. But I guess I'm just like numb to it at this point. We found out about Monty Williams firing after we kind of assumed he was safe. So I don't know. I mean, it's obviously the ownership group and the leadership, they have multiple priorities going on. It's just something you've got to, I guess, get used to as a fan or a supporter of this team. But I mean, I've been operating this whole time under the assumption that they're here, unless some drastic change happens. I'm not trying to speculate whether or not that's the right call or not. But I'm just under the assumption that they are both sticking around. I feel like even last year we had a lot of they put off the end of season press conference or whatever it was, and everyone just started jumping to conclusions about what that meant and that meaning absolutely nothing. I don't know. I mean, I am hesitant to jump to any conclusions about it besides the fact that I think the current group is kind of safe where they are. But I think the inherent implication of that is things better trend upwards quickly at the start of next season, or else you may be looking at some changes, and that has its own set of implications too, right? I mean, if you think about DeMarcus Cousins, and you know, if you're really thinking about sticking with Alvin Gentry, and he starts off next season underperforming, and the team's not good, you fire him, like, and in the beginning of DeMarcus Cousins' contract year, I mean, a guy who's had enough head coaches in his whole 7 or how many year career, more as many head coaches as some players have over multiple careers, you know, that's obviously a concern. So there's a lot of implications no matter what they end up doing. But as of right now, I expect the status quo, unless I've been wrong before, but that's kind of where I sit now.
Yeah, it's a bit of same old, same old. We've been playing this wait-and-see game for the past 3 years in a row, but I guess it beats having them in Oklahoma City, like what almost could have happened 10 years ago. Let's go a bit more into Dell Demps. A simple yes or no will suffice if you want to move right on along. Demps has, in all likelihood, used his cunning by buying himself another season with this DeMarcus Cousins trade. In 7 seasons... he's something like 42% winning percentage, which is 11th in the West. Last year, the excuse was injuries, 351 games worth of them. This season, it was, you know, starting the year without Drew Holiday and then hitching the wagon to DeMarcus and figuring stuff out. Demps said, "We had a lot of challenges this year, but I do like the direction and the path that we're headed." What do you make about Dell Demps going forward? If you are the president of basketball operations, Mickey Loomis, do you cut him now, or do you hitch your wagon to this Demps, Gentry, DeMarcus Cousins bandwagon for one more year?
I'm really glad I'm not in charge, because I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I would do. I do think the Cousins trade kind of saved his job. I don't think Demps has done a great job over the course of his tenure, or over his tenure as GM. But I do think he deserves more credit than I think he's gotten for the DeMarcus Cousins trade. It's pretty clear that he negotiated the Kings down from what we thought was a grandfather, like, or we thought was a pretty great offer for the from the Pelicans' perspective, to an even better one. I mean, I think all of us were just kind of blown away when we found out it was only one first-round pick and a second-round pick and Buddy, essentially. And so I think he deserves credit for that. But at the same time, if you're basing your decision on his future on that move, I think that's probably a mistake. So it all depends on who you're replacing with, right? I mean, it's easy to say, oh, yeah, Dell Demps has got to go. It's harder to say Dell Demps has to go and name the replacement, you know? So it's just a complicated question. Do I think he has earned the right for one more season because of the Cousins trade? No. But you also would need to have a real plan in place for who you're going to replace Demps with, and on top of that, what you're going to do with the head coaching position. So there's a lot of decisions that would need to be made, and it's not as simple as, oh, Dell Demps has got to get fired. And so that's kind of where I sit.
Yeah, and that's the difficulty here. I talked to Jeff Duncan of the Times-Picayune a few days ago, and he said the ownership kind of goes where the wind takes them. It never really feels like they have a direct plan in place. They just, you know, see opportunities and they grab them. I looked at the poll on NOLA.com. 87% of fans want Demps gone. 72% want Gentry gone. So it's clear where they stand. But, you know, like we just said, Demps, Gentry, and Boogie, their fates are now inevitably tied together probably for this remaining season. Should the Pelicans make the playoffs, you have to believe all of them stay. Everybody gets extended for at least another year or two. But let's say we enter January 5 games back of the 8th seed in the West again. Does it make sense to you, Mason, to let a lame duck general manager dictate the fate of the Pelicans at the trade deadline and possibly make a decision like trading DeMarcus Cousins?
No, I mean, I think you're right. If they're at that situation, they've got to make sure that you don't have. I mean, and honestly, this has been a concern for a while now about. So let me back up. That concern also goes all the way up to ownership, right? So you have, if you have a GM who is being kind of dictated by, as you said before, an almost 90-year-old owner and that group, to really get win as soon as possible at any cost. And I'm not saying they've done this at any cost, but it's a tough situation. I feel like, to Dempsey's credit, he's had to make decisions at times with one hand tied behind his back, and in terms of maybe he didn't have all the same resources in terms of taking the long view with some of the other front offices around the NBA. But that being said, I mean, if you come to January and they're out of the, you have DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis, and you are not a playoff team, there are some serious issues, and that's, you know, I want to believe that would not be the case. The Pelicans were a pretty darn good team in March, once they figured out this whole Cousins and AD thing, once they started getting a little bit more chemistry together. So, I mean, if that's really the case, and they're out on the outside of the playoffs looking in with two of the top 15 players in the NBA, you've got to make some pretty serious changes, and you may even expect it a little before that.
Definitely. In March, the Pelicans were 10-6, I believe. It was their only month with 10 wins or more. I think they went on 8-3 run at one point. I did an article on Etuan Moore yesterday, and with DeMarcus's addition, the plus-minus on each side, offense and defense, dramatically improved. Let's talk a bit more about Boogie. He averaged somewhere around 24-11 on the year. He's got a lot of heavy competition for the All-NBA team, including Rudy Gobert, Marc Gasol, Cat, possibly even Brow among centers, and DeAndre Jordan. Do you think he makes one of the All-NBA teams?
Nah, I don't think so. I think it seems like, and I saw this the other, I think yesterday, the early returns for All-NBA voting, and it's about 12% of total, so by no means a representative sample, but AD has been getting the center votes, which makes sense because he played more than half the year at center. But him and Gobert are going to lock down two of those spots already. And so you're talking about one spot left, and you've got DeAndre Jordan, who I think is not as good as Cousins, but he's playing for a much better team in the Clippers. You've got Marc Gasol. I don't see Cousins making it. I think he's close, but I don't think he's going to make one of the All-NBA teams. I don't know how concerned he is with something like that, to be honest. He's got enough else to deal with the trade and figuring out, you know, what his next season's going to look like.
Yeah, and finding a place to stay, probably. I talked to Jordan Crawford a few weeks ago, and the trades just happen at such a furious pace that some of these guys don't even have a place to live or a car. They're eating takeout every meal. It's pretty insane. But one more Boogie question. He kept Gentry's pace. I read a lot on Jake Madison's article today on Bourbon Street Shots. He was often criticized by us, by guys on your site, for sort of lazily joining the offense in transition, just sitting at the foot of the three-point line. Some say, you know, Drew couldn't get him the ball in the elbow where he likes it. Some say because he was shooting 45% from that spot and Gentry sort of wanted him there. And others because of a sore Achilles and being a bit out of shape due to limited practice time. Is this the transition offense we're going to continue to see with Boogie? Or do you think it changes? Or do you think it was just a result of injuries and being out of shape?
I don't even know if it was. I don't want to rush judgment and say he was out of shape. I do think the Achilles case, I don't think that's the reason. But I think it certainly, you know, once you hear he hit a sore Achilles and played through it for a while, I mean, you can understand he'll take some shortcuts when he feels he should. But I mean, talking to some of the Kings writers, I mean, they are anyone who followed Boogie on the Kings. I mean, it's not like this is a rare occurrence, but I think what you saw from the Pelicans offense in March is you obviously see some things tweaked in the offseason when they have a full training camp to really practice together. And you're going to see, you know, Gentry and the coaching staff really try to sit down and figure this out and make sure what they were doing was the best. Cause I mean, it's not just it's not just the players that are changing, changing teams midseason. Suddenly your coaching, your GM makes the trade and tells your coach, all right, you've got to figure out how to fit this, you know, this square peg in a round hole. Even though that square peg is one of the best players in the league, it's still a major shift from what you were doing before, right? You're playing Anthony Davis mostly at center, and now you've got Cousins at center, and that's, and you got to, you know, make it work. And obviously, again, it's nice to be able to have a player of Cousins' ability to who will help make that process less painful. But I think overall what you end up seeing in March, once they started to mesh and play better, is is pretty close to what you'll see next season, but I would not be surprised to see some changes and some adjustments when once they've had a full camp to really figure out how it is they want to play.
You know, I'm going to go off topic for just one second. Stick with me, if you will. I've heard so much talk about franchises having difficulty acclimating to new players and integrating those players into their systems and stuff. And I keep having this analogy that Bill Simmons always mentions, like if the aliens come to Earth and the fate of our civilization is due to like a basketball contest. And let's say you have like, I don't know, a great team like the San Antonio Spurs are challenging the aliens. Are you like, are people trying to say that you wouldn't put Chris Paul on that team just because it might affect their chemistry?
I don't know. I mean, that's a really tough one. I mean, you look at, I'll think back to the Miami Heat, back when LeBron, Bosh, and Wade got together. Like that team was, that team started slow. I mean, in a one game sample, I mean, if you're talking about a great team with real chemistry and continuity versus, you know, potentially adding a little more talent, I don't rock the boat. If you're going to tell me I can add a guy like Chris Paul, maybe I bring him off the bench, something like that for one game. But I do value, assuming the team is already at that level, I value that chemistry over adding maybe one supreme talent for a one game sample. Yeah.
Thank you so much for going with me on that. When I listen to Ryan Schwan and Michael, that question's always buried in the back of my head. Like, do you want to add that person, or do you want to just like slowly, like, you know, integrate them into the lineup? But let's get to our central storyline, because I want to talk a bit about this. It's Jrue Holiday, of course. It's the word on everybody, the tip of everybody's tongue. He just won an NBA Community Cares Award. By all accounts, he's a great guy. Bleacher Report dubbed him the best defensive point guard in the NBA. Of course, his season was up and down. It's been well chronicled by everybody with the beginning of the season, with his wife, and then with the Boogie trade affecting some of his numbers and percentages. Del Demp said, obviously, we would like to have him back. He's got a tough decision to make. We're going to let the process play out. And Demp said he believes that Holiday is the best option for us to be a good team. You'd have to believe his agent, Jason Glushon, you know, told him he wants the 5-year, $176 million, max extension, according to Larry Kuhn. And you'd have to think the Pelicans wouldn't lay down that contract, but maybe Demps and Gentry are waiting from the go-ahead from Loomis and Benson. The Lakers, Nuggets, Knicks, and 76ers are said to be interested. What is your take on Jrue Holiday, Mason Ginsburg? Do you want him back, and at what price?
Yeah, of course. I want him back. I mean, there are a lot. Assuming the Pelicans can get him for a reasonable price, and they have that sort of agreement, the Pelicans have a unique situation with the fact that they can play with his, they can keep his cap hold on the books and try to maneuver around it and then sign him last. And so if you can get him for a reasonable price, that probably gives you the best chance to really maximize your talent on the roster right now. Obviously there's a threshold there. And once the scale tips, even though you can keep his cap hold on the books, if you're going to pay him too much, that's going to cripple you in the long term. And so, it feels like, talking to some of the other guys on our site, we're all kind of in agreement around where we think the line for Jrue is. And it sounds like, you know, four years, $90 million, I think, is where ballpark where a lot of us are sitting. I also said that I would go to, if you give him a player option for a fifth year, maybe 100 to $105 million. So that would be a lower annual value, but you give him the option to extend that to that fifth year, which I could see him, he's potentially valuing, But yeah, I think 490, 495 at the absolute most is where I would sit with Jrue, and I think that's pretty fair value. But yeah, it's definitely not an easy decision for him for the Pelicans. I mean, he's obviously a great talent, but he's not a guy you can just write a blank check and max out for 5 years. I mean, the nice thing about Jrue is that this summer, I think he turns 27. And so even if you gave him a 5-year deal, it's not like he's going to be taking it. It's going to take him through his mid 30s. I mean, he gets to 32 after the summer, after the last year of the deal. So, you know, that's, that's as long as you believe, and I do, that Drew's knee injury is behind him. There's not really a reservation there from a contract length perspective. It's all about the dollars.
Definitely. And Drew's been pretty quiet about his plans in the offseason. I like the numbers that you mentioned. 4 years, 90 sounds fair. Just for the fans out there, he is eligible for 4 years, 130 on the free agent market. I would be shocked if somebody ponied up that much for him. But whether he stays or goes, Dell Demps has said, we're going to look at a lot of options. Gentry said option A, option B, option C, based on what Drew does. We're going to broaden our search to find the best possible outcome for the season, obviously shooting. And we've got a couple of our own shooters with question marks next to their names. We've got Dante Cunningham, who's got a player option of $3 million. We're waiting to see on what he's going to decide. And then Dell Demps has been quoted as saying he would consider Quincy Pondexter's return as a free agent signing. He called it bad luck, the infection following his surgery. Let's start with Dante Cunningham. Do you think he opts out, and how much do you think he's worth on the open market? I believe he just turned 30 last week.
Yeah, there's like a, I won't say zero, but there is a 1% chance he opts into the last year of that deal. I mean, once with the cap jump now, I mean, minimum salary for him is going to be half of that. So, I mean, the risk reward here is pretty heavily skewed towards low risk for him to opt out. And he shot, he shot close to 40% on the year from 3-point range. I mean, I'm not going to say that's sustainable unless he's shooting just corner threes. And granted, that's most of what he shot with the Pelicans last year. But he'll get more than that on the free agent market. I'm sure he could probably sign a 1-year deal for maybe close to double that. But I just don't see any possible way that Cunningham opts into that contract. And you know, that's kind of, I was talking a lot about the trade of the Cousins trade and why, you know, why the Pelicans ended up trading Langston Galloway in the deal and getting Caspi. And one of the interesting arguments that I can't remember if it was Jake or McNamara, but mentioned that, you know, yeah, you probably don't think that Galloway is going to opt into that last year $5 million contract. But if you're thinking about operating under the cap and there's even like a 10% chance that he's going to opt in, it's better to move him. And that may have been the Pelicans' line of thinking for this for that deal. But I just think there's no chance that Dante opts in.
And to expound a little bit on Quincy Pondexter, I read Michael McNamara's article today talking about possibly utilizing him in a trade, stretching Ashik, trading Ajinsa. I don't think it's likely that anybody takes on Ashik's contract, even with a first attached to it. What are some of your ideas on creating cap space this summer? Do you trade Quincy with Ajinsa and a first-round pick? Do you stretch Ashik? How would you create cap space?
Option one, if they're going to stay over the cap, there's probably no reason to do any of that stuff, just because, and I don't think they'd have to do some serious magic to come near the luxury tax, and unless they max through, obviously. So now, if we're assuming they're going to operate under the salary cap, then the easiest first thing to do is to stretch Omer. You could find a few teams to trade him to who could. I know McNamara wrote about the idea of sending him to Dallas, and Cuban could just stretch him pretty easily. I think that's going to cost New Orleans something if they really want to move that contract. And so I think if you're trying to make space, may as well just stretch it. If you're really looking to maximize your spending ability in the short term, and you don't want to jeopardize any assets moving forward either. So. Stretching on there is easy. Training Quincy and Ajinsa will not be. You have that second round pick this year which is I can't remember, 40th maybe. And so you could attach that to maybe Ajinsa and hope that makes it work. But you also have to think about the order of operations here. A team's probably going to be much more likely to say, okay, we'll take Ajinsa after free agency shakes out and some of those top players are gone, it's going to take a lot to move a guy like Agent or Pondex or that salary up front, because teams are valuing that cap space that they have. So the other pieces would be more difficult. So I just I think those are the moves you would have to look at. It's Poindexter, it's Ajinsa, and it's Oshik. So, you could get rid of them. The question is how much it's going to cost you.
Yeah, one of our buddies over at the fan side, Denver Nuggets side, Matthew Huff, he mentioned an interest in Ajinsa because, hilariously enough, every time Ajinsa plays the Denver Nuggets, he ends up playing well. So they had a bit of interest in him, maybe for Will Barton. They're really heavy at shooting guard over there. And as far as the second round pick, maybe you can help me with this. The 34th pick was in possession of the Pelicans by way of the 76ers, but according to NBADraft.net, that is the pick that went to the Sacramento Kings, and we are holding on to our own pick, which is 40th. I don't understand all the dynamics of that, but that's the way it sits according to them. So like you said, we will pick 40th, and we lost that 76ers pick. Now, I've got one more question before I let you go. Obviously, we're all very excited about our D-League team coming in 2018. Just today, it was announced that they are down to six finalist cities. We've got Baton Rouge, Jackson, Mobile, Pensacola, St. Tammany, and Shreveport. And Dell Demson, Alvin Gentry have both mentioned that they want a team in proximity so that they can call players up and down whenever they need to. Pensacola seems like, do you know, what is that, like a four-hour drive? Shreveport's got to be like 4 or 5 hours.
I know Shreveport's five. Jackson is pretty close. I think it's about the same distance as Baton Rouge, but just in the other direction. Mobile is 2 to 3. Pensacola is 4. Mobile's a guess. The rest are, I'm pretty sure about the rest.
So I've done you that, get to decide, Mason. Where do you want to put this squad?
It's tough. I mean, I was thinking. Baton Rouge makes a lot of sense for proximity's sake, but I think if you're really trying to expand the fan base, I think either Jackson or Mobile are both fine options. Jackson's close. I think Mobile's a bigger city, so I wouldn't mind seeing it Mobile and try to really broaden that fan base as much as you can. Shreveport's pretty equidistant from Dallas and New Orleans. Actually, it might be even closer to Dallas. So I think Mobile might be your best bet if you're trying to keep it close enough while trying to really extend your reach as an organization to attract more fans and really make that pitch. So I go with Mobile, but I wouldn't be upset if it ends up in Baton Rouge.
Mason, thank you so much. We are out of time. One more thing before you go, you guys can follow Mason at Mason Ginsburg. You can read his material at Bourbon Street Shots and True Hoop Network. Mason, tell our listeners about some of the stuff that you'll be writing and contributing to coming up this summer.
Yeah, I will be, as usual, just following free agency pretty closely, monitoring, as we talked about at the top, the leadership and head coaching situation, and if there should be some sort of change, we'll be all over it. But we're all very excited for the summer. I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit about the draft too. Fingers crossed for the on lottery night that Pelicans can get pretty darn lucky. Be all over everything. There are definitely peaks and valleys in the off season, but ready for the fun stuff.
Mason, I've been following you for years. This was a pretty cool kick for me. So once again, thank you so much for your time, and hope to have you on again soon.
Yeah, love to. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you again to Mason. You guys, that was Mason Ginsburg at Mason Ginsburg. And thank you to our friends at Bourbon Street Shots. Now, to give you guys a preview of what we've got coming up, we've got Brendan Kleen, also of Bourbon Street Shots, coming up over the weekend. Thank you so much to him for appearing on the program. In case you guys don't know Brendan, well, he used to run this ship. He used to be the site editor at PelicanDebrief.com. So very excited to have him back and put him on the other chair. He used to host this podcast back in December. But for now, you guys, a little bit about me, Preston Ellis, at Preston Ellis, a little bit about our site, PelicanDebrief.com. We are doing season reviews of the Pelicans roster this week. And if you've made it this far, do us one more favor. Go on iTunes, rate, share, subscribe, retweet us. We really appreciate any support we can get from you guys. And just stay tuned. We're going to keep slinging these pods at you all off season long. We're not going to leave you in the dark. So for now, Let's go, Pels.